Outskirts Science Fiction Theater on Avid Reader Nation. The Blue Journal is a new novel by L.T. Graham, and it's an explosive blend of suspense, intrigue, and erotica. Best-selling author John Land calls The Blue Journal a taut, twisty, and terrific psychological thriller that's brilliantly conceived and wondrously timely. This sexy mystery is a real page-turner that will leave you begging for more. Check out The Blue Journal on Amazon.com and paperback or Kindle. When his love for a woman becomes stronger than blood and money, Chrome has to decide what's more important, his family, his love, or his life. This drama-filled, action-packed fiction will leave you in tears. They say grown men don't cry, but these men laugh, they cry, and they bleed. Tears of Joy by Michael Lawrence. How far will he go to prove he can be different? When will he face facts? Life is full of tears of joy. Sometimes we smile to keep from crying. These men face harsh realities in life, and the tears never stop. Buy Tears of Joy by Michael Lawrence from Lulu.com or Amazon.com today. It is reported there are about 46 million Americans living below the poverty line. Yet Paul LaJoy writes that it is impossible to be poor in this country. Read his book and you will know why he makes this bold and outrageous statement. He knows better. He was born in a poor village in Africa. It is impossible to be poor in America. Get this book by Paul LaJoy at www.lajoysolutions.com and amazon.com. Welcome to Outskirts Science Fiction Theater. I'm the eroticist, La Drama Princess, more tamely known as Deidre Huey. An enthusiast of science fiction, this show was created to feature authors of all kinds of science fiction mixes, sometimes more so speculative fiction. Tonight on Outskirts Science Fiction Theater, Misha Burnett will read from We Pass From View. Enjoy him.
Good evening and welcome to Outskirts Science Fiction Theater. My name is Misha Burnett. I'll be Deidre's guest for tonight, and I will be reading from my short story, We Pass From View, recently published in the anthology Sins of the Past by Chastity Nicole and Debbie Kupfer, available on Amazon as both ebook and trade paperback. The theme of the anthology is historical stories of the macabre, and I decided to take a little trip to that bygone year of 1963 in the exotic town of Burbank, California, and explore one of my other passions, drive-in movies. So, please, have a seat, pull up a lawn chair, grab some popcorn. The show will start as soon as it gets dark. We Pass From View by Misha Burnett. Read by Misha Burnett. Joseph Nemer directed 47 films, beginning with The Congo Gunman in 1955 and ending with Mission Asteroid in 1974. All of his films were made for B-Movie Mill's Spectacular Studios, mostly produced by Jaime Greenbaum. While several of his movies, notably Hellcats in High Heels, 1964, and The Room Without a Door, 1966, enjoyed a brief cult status for what were, at the time, shockingly explicit scenes of lesbianism, Nemer is best known for a film that it is said no living person has ever seen. We Pass From View was filmed in July and August of 1963, with principal photography on location what is now Wildwood Canyon Park outside of Burbank, California. The script was based on a book of the same name, written by a young man named Michael Chase, who would go on to found the cult Clear Vision World. Chase and his followers, including four children, were brutally murdered on April 23, 1982, by persons unknown. How Chase's book became the basis of a spectacular film is an interesting story in itself. 1961, Robert Sterling, at the time the chairman of the studio's board of directors, made arrangements to purchase the film rights for the entire catalog of the paperback original publisher Cupid's Bow Press. As a condition of the purchase, Spectacular was required to film We Pass From View. It is believed that this unusual clause was made a condition of the deal by Cupid's Bow publisher, Sabrina Erikovich, who went on to join Michael Chase's organization and eventually to die with him. Since Cupid Bow owned the rights to the popular codenamed Hangman spy thriller series, Sterling agreed to the terms and gave studio staff writer Robin Wilde the task of converting Chase's book into a screenplay. Spectacular went on to film 6 codename Hangman movies, which were among the studio's most lucrative films. No known copies of Michael Chase's original book exist. By all accounts, it did not sell. Only one edition was printed, and the majority of that was likely sent back to be pulped. Robin Wilde, in a letter to his long-term companion, actress Ellie Vance, called it this unreadable pile of shit. Even the Cupid's Bow catalog entry is uncharacteristically terse. We Pass From View appears only in one edition, fall 1960. The entry reads, "A fascinating look at the myths and realities surrounding death and dying by Professor of Philosophy Dr. Michael Chase." Michael Chase, it should be noted, often claimed a doctorate, sometimes in physics, sometimes in philosophy. However, there are no records of him completing an advanced degree at any of the schools that he claims to have attended. Faced with the daunting task of transforming a look at the myths and realities surrounding death and dying, fascinating or otherwise, into a screenplay suitable for the drive-in movie market, Wilde chose to pen a tale of a group of college students who go camping in the woods and die from mysterious causes one by one. It will be remembered that Wilde is also responsible for the screenplay of Spectacular's adaptation of Baudelaire's Flowers of Evil that contained, among other things, vegetable creatures from Venus who had come to Earth to harvest males' vital fluids. Since neither the book nor the screenplay is available for comparison, the question of how faithful the latter is to the former must remain unanswered. Given what we know of both works, however, the probable answer is not very. There is, however, one section of the screenplay that seems to have been lifted directly from Chase's book. Shortly before her death from bone cancer in 1987, Betty Blow, born Elizabeth Tucker, the lead actress in We Pass From View and Joseph Namer's wife, was interviewed in Playboy magazine. While most of the article is concerned with her claims that she carried on numerous homosexual affairs with various female celebrities, towards the end of the interview she was asked about We Pass From View and the film's alleged effect on the test audiences. Her reply follows. "It was that fucking Appendix A. They made me read the whole thing aloud. Robin refused to transcribe it. He told me just to read it out of the book. He said that Bob, Sterling, told him that it had to be in the movie. That's the part that made everybody go apeshit. It was bad. I don't remember what it said. I don't remember reading it at all. It was like I was in a trance. But I knew it was some serious bad shit. Joe didn't let anybody watch the dailies of that scene. He just shipped it straight off." It was a very small crew who traveled to the campsite north of Burbank to film We Pass From View. Most accounts report that Namer operated the cameras himself. He had begun his film career as a camera operator and frequently chose to run the cameras, both to keep the costs low and to control the specifics of his shots. The sound technician was one Greg Donnelly, who committed suicide in May of 1970. It is likely, although employment records are unclear, that Alice Monroe served as assistant director on the film. She worked with Namer on many of his other films, and at least one account of the location shooting refers to Alice setting marks during the shoot. Alice Monroe died in September of 1968, also a suicide. Although there were almost certainly other crew members, no one else associated with the location shooting has been identified. The cast was also small. In addition to Betty Blow, first billed on the released material, Ellie Vance, billed as Esther Vance for contractual reasons, Eve Eden, Neville Brooke, and Hank Rank comprised the company. Betty Blow's sole published remarks regarding the film were referenced above. Neville Brooke is on record threatening the life of a reporter who asked him about the film. None of the other cast members are believed to have commented on the film in print at all. Eve Eden vanished without a trace in late 1965. She had reportedly incurred very large debts to Las Vegas casinos, and it is believed that she either vanished to avoid her creditors or was murdered by them and her body hidden. Rumors have circulated regarding her reappearance since then, but none have been verified. The other cast members are now dead. Ellie Vance was murdered in February of 1972 by Robin Wilde, who then killed himself. Hank Rank died of complications from syphilis in November of 1975. Neville Brooke was found in a hotel room in Tijuana in June of 1980, shot in the head. Case is still unsolved. At the time the following interview was conducted, January 17, 2014, Joseph Namer was the only living person who could reliably be placed at the campsite north of Burbank during the filming of We Pass From View. He was 83 years old and had recently been diagnosed with late-stage pancreatic cancer. He would die within the month on February 12th. The interview was conducted by Aaron Tellman, a graduate student of film history at UCLA. Namer was residing at the time in a managed care facility in Anaheim, California. Tellman contacted the notoriously reclusive Namer without much hope that permission for an interview would be granted. The director agreed to talk, however. It is likely that news of his impending death induced him to tell the story. The transcript that follows is unedited. "I really can't tell you how much it means to me, Mr. Namer. I am a huge fan of your body of work, and save the bullshit, son. I'm a dead man. I don't have time for it." "Okay, let's get to the point. Your career includes..." "I said save the bullshit. I've waited 50 years to tell this story. Are you going to record it or not?" "I am recording it, sir." "See? That's a recorder. Damn, we used to lug around those monster reel-to-reels. That old thing's going to get all this?" "Every word." "It better. I'm not saying it twice." "I can play it back and show you." "Nah, you say it's working. It's on your head. Now tell me what you think you know about We Pass From View." "It was your 19th film for Spectacular. It had a very limited release in the winter of 1963, and no copies are believed to exist." "That's it. I thought you were a movie guy." "That's all that's known for sure." "But they still talk about it, right? What happened in Topeka and St. Louis?" "There are rumors." "So spill already. I don't want to waste time with shit you already know. Give me the Weekly World version. What do you think you know?" "Rumors are that the film had a bad effect on the audiences who saw it. There were riots in the theater, and Spectacular had the film destroyed." "Riots?" "Son, in St. Louis, a man ate his little girl, clawed her chest open, and swallowed her heart, his own daughter, because of a movie I made." "That's extreme." "You don't believe me." "This was the 60s, boy. No internet, no Twitter, no cell phones with cameras. In those days, you had the money, you got things silent. Hell, St. Louis was the easy one. Old mob town, you know. They're used to making things go away. Topeka was something else. Jaime had to sell his soul to get that one squashed. It's the whole reason we started doing the skin flicks, to pay back favors." "How does making a movie or watching a movie make someone do something like that?" "Damned if I know, son. Damned if I know. Something in that book, some kind of evil magic spell. That picture was cursed. You could feel it. You knew something was wrong when you made it." "Not at first. Oh, there were the problems from the get-go, but they were the usual problems. Script was crap. Robin could do good work. He could do damn fine work when he was sober. But he was never sober. This one was worse than usual. Neville was a problem, but he was always a problem. Reefer and opium mixed. Never did find his stash. We were living in tents, and he figured out some place to hide his dope where I couldn't find it. You seen those zombie movies everybody's making now? That was Neville Afternoon, the walking goddamn dead. Hank, God bless the man. Big, pretty, dumb as a box of rocks. All the heart in the world, but he couldn't remember two words in a row if they weren't written on his hand. And then it was Betty and Eve. Betty and Eve? They had just become an item, hooked up, whatever you want to call it. Those kids were all over each other, and we didn't have a lot of privacy, you know? Hell, even Hank picked up on it. So you knew?" "Of course I knew. I knew she was a dyke when I married her. Sorry, ain't supposed to say dyke anymore. Lesbian. Person of woman identifiedness. Whatever. She never lied to me. We were always honest with each other. Back then, it was all about keeping up appearances. Out in public, we were the perfect couple. After hours, she had her girls, I had mine. That's why she wanted to do all those girls behind bars pictures, you know? Let her be herself on film. Everybody in the industry knew. We just kept it out of the papers. Like I say, keeping things out of the paper was a lot easier back then. Drugs, sex, those were the usual problems. Movie business is as crazy as roller skates for snakes. Always has been ever since Tesla invented the damn thing. Too much pressure, too much money, everybody's a prima donna, and you're all working way too many hours in a day. Shit that'd get you fired from any other job is just business as usual, Hollywood. These days it's just the same. Take my word for it. Folks just learned to be a lot more discreet. But you said the picture was cursed, more than just the usual problems. Yeah. Yeah, it was. I don't know. It was 50 years ago. I don't remember all that clearly anymore. What I knew at the time, what I figured out later. Hell, some of it I've maybe made up over the years. Some things, son, they give you nightmares for the rest of your life. After a while, you can't tell the difference between the nightmare and what really happened. What do you remember? First, it was just a monster movie. Robin's script didn't even show a monster. Everything happened off screen. Kids around a campfire, one of them goes off to piss, you hear a scream, you find a body. Shot it with a day-for-night filter so we didn't need to rig lights. Hot as hell with that campfire. August in the desert, you know. I don't think Hank even packed a shirt. I'd get Neville's dialogue in the morning because I know he'd be nodding off all afternoon, trying to keep the girls separated. All the time, you got to keep to the schedule. That Space Woman movie, Gravity, said it took 3 years to make it. My day, 3 weeks was a long shot. That's a lot of stress. That's the business. You work your ass up, and then you go blow off steam, and then you go back and you do it again. Anyway, we'd send out the dailies, and most of the time that was it. Only said something if there was a problem. And it was a problem? Yeah. Got a message from Jaime to make sure the crew was staying out of the way, because there was a strange shadow on a couple of the shots. Now, remember, we're shooting day for night in August in the woods. The whole frame is nothing but shadows. I got the two darkest filters we own stuck on with gaffer's tape, and I'm trusting the lab to make it work. There's a shadow that shouldn't be there. It's on their end. Besides, all the crew I've got is me, Alice, and some union putts running sound. Alice Monroe was there then. Of course she was there. She was my AD on every picture I made up until she died. God, that hit me harder than when Betty died. Alice was, should have been listening to director in half of my pictures. More. Those days, girls didn't direct. Hell, even now there ain't many. They're all indies. Old Boys Club never dies. Equal rights is for on the screen, not behind the camera. You, Alice Monroe, and Greg Donnelly. That was the crew? Greg Donnelly? Is that his name? I don't know, maybe. I just call him Dickhead. Thought he needed an air-conditioned trailer and a 20-minute break after every shot. Knew how to run a boom, though. I'll give him that. Never saw him or his shadow through the viewfinder. Alice, of course, she was always standing right behind me. But the shadow. Told Jaime it wasn't on my end. Check with the lab. He sent me a still. There's a shot of Betty, Neville, Eve, and Hank. Ellie was out of the picture by then. She did her death scene and went back home. Anyway, you got the four of them sitting on this log by the campfire. Eve's talking. She's got her mouth open. And standing behind him, there's his shadow. It's like a man all in black just standing there looking down at him. You see he's got his arms crossed. You can almost see his face. It's like he's listening to what Eve's saying. What did you think? First off, I thought, that man is standing on my grave. That picture bothered me in a way I can't explain. Knowing what I know now, just thinking about it makes my blood run cold. At the time, though, I figured it's double exposure. Spectacular bought film as cheap as possible. Some of it was spoiled. I knew that figure wasn't anything I'd shot, so I guess the last can I'd used had been partially exposed before it got to me. Either that or the lab was dicking around. This was before Photoshop, remember? Everything we did on film, we had to do optically. What did you do? Asked Jaime if you wanted me to reshoot those scenes. He said no, of course. Reshooting costs money. So we kept going. You kept on schedule. Beat the schedule. If I remember right, we had 13 days, did it in 11, maybe 10. We were supposed to go home Sunday afternoon, packed it in Friday night. All of us just wanted to get gone from there. Mood of that campsite, it got ugly. Everybody was on edge. The heat, the bugs, eating box lunches, 3 meals a day. We hated that mountain. We started to hate each other. Neville just about tore off Hank's head one day over nothing. Can't remember what started the fight. Punching Hank was like kicking a puppy. The kid was a big old teddy bear. There was just so much tension out there. And things kept moving around. What kind of things? Personal things. Neville was reading a book, I think it was Jack Kerouac. One morning it wasn't there where he left it. We find it later that day stuck in a tree. The girl's clothes. Betty had this blouse. It was blue silk. She looked dynamite in it. Got it for her in Mexico. She loved that blouse. Anyway, goes missing, and she thought Eve took it, which was nuts. They shared a tent, so where the hell was Eve going to try to hide it? Found it on the ground a couple of days later, covered in the most revolting slime you can imagine, like goose shit or something. Only there weren't any geese up there. Wasn't much of anything up there. Remember that. I mean, sure, it's a desert. You don't expect Bambi and Thumper. Still, it was way too quiet on that mountain. I don't remember seeing a single bird or a lizard or anything. Alice made jokes about camping on an old Indian burial ground, but she wasn't really joking. That place felt wrong, and it got worse the longer we were there. When I said I wanted to wrap up early, everybody was on board with it. What happened when you got back? I went to Mexico. Bob Sterling had a house in Veracruz. I think it was his brother's or cousin's or something. Anyway, I took this dancer, was between shows, and we sat on the beach and drank around for a week. So you didn't edit We Pass From You. Never even saw it. You directed it. You shot it. Yeah, but I never watched it straight through. You never watched your own movie? Never seen most of them. Do I look like Steve Spielberg to you? Speck made movies the way Ford makes cars, on an assembly line. No such thing as creative control at a place like that. Give me a list of shots, I shoot them, wrap them up, give them to the gaffer to drive back to the studio. And at the studio, they splice them together. Shot one, shot two, shot three, all the way to the closing credits. So, nobody ever watched the movie straight through before it was released? I didn't say that. Then who saw it? Who? I heard you the first time, boy. You got anything to drink on you? Drink? Booze, boy. You got a bottle in that snazzy coat? No. Sorry. Didn't think so. You know you look queer, son? That's a good thing these days. Get anywhere in the industry, you gotta be queer, at least look queer. Used to be all showgirls, now it's those muscle boys with their silly ass hair. That's interesting. Do you remember Dave Cohen and Sherry Long? Had to be them, on account of what happened later. What happened? Didn't happen right away, not like the other screenings. They waited to the weekend. They were married, not to each other, other people. I don't know if they had a thing going first or if it was all from what they saw. What happened? Maybe if you shut up for a second, I'll tell you. Damn, I need a drink. You can't get a drink in this damn place. You can get morphine, but no whiskey. How the hell does that make sense? You figured out how to shut up. Good. Smart boy. We went to Dave's house first, killed Peggy, Dave's wife. Took her body over to Sherry's house. Killed Tom, you know, Sherry's husband. Cut up both of the bodies and cooked them. Then they ate themselves to death. Didn't know a person could do that, did you? Shove so much meat down your own throat that your stomach bursts? I never heard about that. Nobody ever did. The time we found them, we already knew about Topeka and St. Louis. We were ready. Made them disappear, too. I see. No, you don't see shit, but that's okay. Nice of you to say so. Don't lie to me. You don't believe a word of this. I don't care. I gotta tell it no matter what, and I don't have much time. I wish I knew why they didn't go bugfuck right away. Maybe because they watched movies for a living, they were, I don't know, habituated or something. Took a while to work. Maybe it was because it was just the two of them. Worked faster with a crowd, all those people feeding off each other like a mob. I hope that's it. Or else, it knew. It knew that if it took them right away, the picture wouldn't get released, and that means it's smart. Smart enough to know where it wanted to be. It. What is it? I don't know. I don't know, and I don't want to know. Ever since Auschwitz, I didn't believe in God, and I didn't believe in the devil. I still don't believe in God, but I know the devil's real. I know it for a fact. The devil. Is that what you shot out there in the woods? I don't know what else you'd call it. And the film. Burned every print. Made damn sure we got every print. War prints, dailies, test shots. We even cleaned out the cutting room. No stills, nothing. Burned every copy of the script, every copy of that damn book we could find. You're sure it's all been destroyed? Told you I was sure. Back then, movies were big, half dozen reels. You couldn't copy a movie on a flash drive like you can today. We knew how many prints we paid for, and we burned that many. End of story. End of story. Why are you telling the story now if it's over? Because I'm dying, son. Parts of me are already dead. I'm all rotted up inside. If that thing, that shadow that got into my film and killed all those people, if it really is the devil, that's what's waiting for me when I go. And that's not the worst of it. They'll be waiting too. They? Betty, Alice, Neville, Hank, Eve, all of them. Ellie and Robin. They all died first. That means they've been waiting down there in whatever hell that thing calls home. They'll be waiting for me. And they're going to be hungry. Interview ends.
Next week, Saturday, February 14th at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, listen to Cleve Silcox on Outskirts Science Fiction Theater. Join me on Avid Reader Nation here on blogtalkradio.com live for an episode of the Bonafide Literary Show that every author should listen to and give their comments. Sunday, February 15th at 5:30 p.m. Eastern, call in at 818-495-6960 to hear what every author should know about scammers, ripoffs, and robbers. Get more information about this episode and more by visiting www.bonafideliteraryshow.com. Get the book tea Thursday, February 12th at 3 p.m. Eastern from my conversation with S.J. Dunn about her surprising book, Angry Enough to Kill. To reach out to me about any of the other shows, a part of the Avid Reader Nation here on blogtalkradio.com, send me a message to avidreadernation@gmail.com. I'm Deidre Huey, the host of Outskirts Science Fiction Theater. Until you hear from me again, visit LaDramaPrincess.com, but only if you're over 18.